Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, this is Diane Stemple. You're listening to Cutting the Curd on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. So I've been sitting around over the holidays wondering, what's next on Cutting the Curd? I have about a month more of shows, guest hosting for Ann Saxelby, and I was thinking, I've pretty much been focusing on the dedication or quirkiness of cheese people on their various cheese career paths, so it's time to do some more cheese people. And I thought, well, perhaps I could do some of my personal big cheeses, people who inspired me or befriended me along the way. So I'm very pleased to introduce my first guest of 2013, my first big cheese, Max McCalman, who's really everyone's big cheese. Hello, Max.
Thank you. It's great to be here again.
So, yes, cheese is what I am, I guess. You are what you eat, and that's what I do.
Okay. Well, let me tell the audience a little bit about you. I'm sure they know, but I'll reiterate. Max McCalman is the author of three beautiful and excellent cheese books, which I think we all have in our libraries to drool over or to check our information in. He's an award-winning cheese expert and teacher and judge. He's the dean of curriculum at Artisanal, and he's the maître fromager at artisanal.com. A very warm welcome to you, Max.
Thank you.
So I've been thinking, focusing on cheese career paths, and you've got a pretty long one.
Yeah, I'm getting up there.
Well, I don't mean to call you.
Been
old.
Around the block a couple of times.
Your experience.
I've been around the pasture.
Fermented.
Yes, well fermented. Yes.
Anyway, I remember you back in the day when you had your, comparatively small cheese cave at Picheline, and your amazing cheese board. Was that the first amazing cheese board in New York or America or both?
It was definitely not the first. There were other cheese boards, but we became obsessed with the cheese. We started off with 14 when we launched the program.
Mm-hmm. 14 at a time, rotating through?
14 that we thought would be fine.
Okay.
But people would come in and they say, those are pretty good. What do you have this week?
Ah, They pushed you to expand.
Yeah, and then they said, that I love those cheeses. And you took that one off. You put something else there. So what happened to that cheese? And so we switched some cheeses out, but we mostly added cheeses. Mm-hmm. And we went from 14 to 20 to 30 to 40 to 50 to 60 to 70.
And On the plate, on the tray, on top, and then we had a... For those of you who haven't been to Picheline, they would wheel it around the dining room so that it would go in front of your table and you would discuss and select what you wanted on your after-dinner cheese plate.
And they still do that. I'm not affiliated with Picheline anymore, but I like to think of Picheline as the shrine. For me, in my cheese career, but I think Picheline was largely responsible for launching part of this cheese wave in the United States, the appreciation for fine cheeses, cheeses as foods that can stand alone and not just something you melt over macaroni.
Right. Now, you had started in wine?
I used to be a wine guy.
Okay, so when you first started at Picheline, you were the wine guy?
No, I was just working part-time. I had just come off from a two-year sabbatical raising my biological daughter. Had two kids from my wife's first marriage, but after that 2-year sabbatical, it was time for her to go to day school, and so mm-hmm. it was time for me to go to work.
Okay.
At least part time. And Terrence, the chef owner, looked at my resume and thought, well, don't you want to be the general manager? And I said, I can't do that to myself or to my daughter mm-hmm. after being with her 24/7 for the first couple of years of her life, actually more than 2 years of her life. And so I said I could work part-time, but then it became clear fairly quickly that the rest of staff, I don't know, it was difficult to fit in with the rest of the staff because I had a background, a more supervisory background, and in food and beverage and hotels and restaurants. And so I was not a very good order taker, shall we say.
You were your own person.
Kind of my own person, but I was just trying to do it the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And so Terrence, when he was ready to launch the cheese program, I stepped up to the plate. And so I thought that could be a part-time job, but it was only part-time for a couple of days. And then it soon became a very demanding job. Uh-huh. And so,
now, what year did that happen?
The first cheese trolley went out in late 1994.
Oh, wow.
And then in 1995 is when it really started to take off.
Mm-hmm.
And it gained world recognition mm-hmm. Within a few months after it was launched.
How many other restaurants in New York had anything comparable?
Chanterelle had mm-hmm. a nice cheese program.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite as elaborate, but it was good cheese. And of course, Chanterelle's not there anymore. Not too many other places were doing anything very serious. There was an Italian restaurant, I can't remember which it was, but had something, but it was not a very successful program. It maybe had been in the past, but long before mm-hmm. we started ours. So we became a destination.
Mm-hmm.
And Picholine, for cheese lovers, Terrence's food is great,
mm-hmm.
but people wanted to come in for the cheese
mm-hmm.
Primarily, and that did separate us from many other great restaurants in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And it did pretty much put Picholine on the map.
Right, and established the beginning of your cheese career.
Correct, it did. And so I loved cheese
mm-hmm.
all
Had
my
you
life.
Loved it before?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
My first favorite food was cheese.
Oh, really?
One of my earliest childhood memories was sitting on my mother's kitchen counter, and I had a cold, and I was reaching out for a piece of cheese. And my mother said, "Don't touch the cheese, you have a cold."
Oh.
And you might.
Oh, no dairy?
She was afraid that I might infect the cheese with my bugs.
Uh-huh.
And it was probably exactly the food that I needed at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So what would have cured me was denied. And what you're denied is something you can become attached to.
Forever want.
And then growing up in Brazil a few years later, we were told that we shouldn't have any dairy products unless the milk is parboiled, and definitely no cheese. So I was cheese starved during my formative years.
Because of the...
A fear of dairy products in Brazil.
Being from America?
Being from an American, having not been exposed mm-hmm. to all these, mm-hmm. all this microflora that it might...
So you not drink the water either?
We did filter and boil the water, and that mm-hmm. was probably not necessary either.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just precautionary.
Mm-hmm. So when did you get to eat as much cheese as you wanted?
When we came back to the States, I started piling it on. And but then it was not until I had the position at Picholine of being the cheese guy at Picholine that I was able to really pile it on.
Uh-huh.
And so I've been making up for it ever since. But I would probably be... If I had had cheese during my formative years, I would probably be 6'1". That's in my genes, but because I was cheese starved, I'm only about 5'11".
You feel your growth was...
without my calcium.
Oh, okay. that's possible, I guess. Okay, so back then, back at Picholine, what were your favorite things to do as part of the job?
Oh, yeah, one of my favorite things was to... one of them was to... to allay people's fear of cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And people thought that it was, people looked at it like it was poisonous, like it was an indulgence, and like it was fattening.
Mm-hmm.
And people looked at me and they said, well, obviously you don't eat any cheese because look at you.
Max is thin. So just for those of you who haven't met him.
I started doing research on this, and I started to discover that actually, well, I started to believe, I wouldn't say discover, but I began to believe that there was a lot that cheese had going for it, not only for keeping their weight off, but it had many other nutritional benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I've studied it, the more I am, more amazed I am to find out all these great things about cheese.
Mm-hmm.
Another fun part of the job was to suggest cheeses that would pair well with the wines that they requested.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they had preferences for cheese types, then I might be able to recommend a wine partner for those cheese types. And in more cases than not, cheese and wines do work pretty well, so it's not that hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes they do clash, and that's what I started to
You focused on that right away.
Because we wanted to make sure the cheese program paid for itself, and the profits
additional
in the
bottle, wine would help.
The concomitant beverage sales mm-hmm. helped to justify having a cheese program.
Now, back then, who were your big cheeses? Were they cheesemakers? Were they, you know, who did you learn from? Who did you look up to?
Steve Jenkins,
mm-hmm.
Jonathan White,
mm-hmm.
and Judy Shad,
mm-hmm.
and Allison Hooper, and who else? Letty Kilmoyer, and this is going way back. John Greeley,
mm-hmm.
Gerd Stern, Sarah Stern,
mm-hmm.
and Deborah Dickerson. You know, they. Yeah, it's that generation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's great. Now, talk about the opening of Artisanal. That was a big
deal.
Big deal, and a big deal on the cheese scene. What? How did? Who thought of it? How did it? How long did it take? What was it like?
Well, Terrence got the idea because he saw what the cheese program was doing at Picheline, and Picheline was more about the food, a French Mediterranean inspired restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
With a cheese program, and cheese became such a focus at Picheline that he thought that this could be done at a second location.
Mm-hmm.
And because I had...
With even more of a focus on cheese?
With more of a focus on cheese. Mm-hmm. Also with a place for people to purchase the cheeses mm-hmm. that they had enjoyed. So he wanted to have a little retail shop built into it. And you know that shop very well. You worked there yourself for a while.
That was my start in cheese, behind the counter at Artisanal.
Yeah. And and it is a beautiful restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
So he wanted something that was in Manhattan,
mm-hmm.
so he could keep an eye on it. But he wanted it to be a little less formal and than Picheline and bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is a little less formal than Picheline and a little less expensive. And instead of having the trolley brought out, people would select from a menu, or they could go up to the cheese counter and speak with the fromager at the cheese counter
right.
about the selection.
And you also had the sort of caves with the different temperatures
mm-hmm.
in the room that the people could
also
go.
I like the way
go.
You put that, the sort of caves.
Well, yeah. They were supposed to be caves.
Yeah, well, they
At the onset.
Yeah, it's... No, I was not consulted on that, but for
on
some
the
reason.
Particular temperatures and humidities?
Certainly the humidity. I think the temperature worked pretty well, but the humidity levels, that was an afterthought.
Mm-hmm.
We got the birch wood right.
Okay. It was pretty impressive.
Beautiful.
And you could
yeah.
sometimes sit in the area in the back of the restaurant that was surrounded by the refrigerators.
Beautiful.
Do they still keep cheese there? I haven't been there in a long time.
Yeah, they do keep cheeses there,
okay.
but hopefully not for very long.
Okay.
Yeah, because cheeses prefer higher humidity levels. They look good.
Mm-hmm.
And some cheeses are okay with that, but anyway.
Okay. Well, I just got the high sign that it's time for our break. We'll
okay.
be back on Cutting the Curd with Max McCallman after a short break. Thank you.
You're listening to Favorite Flower by Pamela Royal on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef. Pasture raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
Hi, we're back on Cutting the Curd. It's Diane Stemple. My guest is Max McCalman, and we're talking about cheese careers, his first, and then maybe some other people's. Anyway, Max, I have a couple more questions about your career. What would you say your focus is now? What are you doing now in the cheese world?
Good question. Most important thing to me, of which I feel most passionate about, is to rescue cheese, rescue artisan cheese, and support artisan cheese production, not just here in the United States, but around the world.
Mm-hmm.
During my short career, I've seen some fine cheeses become extinct, and I don't think they'll come back.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, many new cheeses are coming along, and that's very exciting, but it's a shame to think that I don't think that I'll ever taste a Langlofen ever again. You remember Langlofen?
I do.
Yeah, from Wales, right?
I didn't like pronouncing it.
No, I'm not pronouncing it very well. But
oh, you do great on pronunciation.
Langlofen, something like that. It was kind of like a Cheshire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How have your particular cheese preferences evolved over the years?
Let's see. I'm open to more kinds.
Mm-hmm.
I do much prefer raw milk cheeses over pasteurized cheeses. That is not to say that I don't think that pasteurized cheeses are not good or can't be great, but I much prefer raw mm-hmm. milk, and this is primarily because one of my second passions is about nutrition
mm-hmm.
and how cheese is a near perfect food.
Mm-hmm.
And
raw makes that better.
Raw to me suggests that it's something that the cheesemaker would probably enjoy. And the raw milk cheeses I have seen in my career have also had a longer shelf life mm-hmm. than the pasteurized cheeses,
mm-hmm.
for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if the cheese has a lot of moisture, high moisture cheese, if it's pasteurized, I call it compromised, is likely to go south much faster than a raw milk version with the same water content.
And isn't the purpose the opposite of that? I mean, isn't the FDA fear that raw milk is risky and pasteurized is safe?
Well, I think that there's something to be said for pasteurization, because if you don't know your milk supply, you don't know the health of the animals, you don't know about the cheese, the milk handlers or the method of transport, it may be a good idea to pasteurize milk. But if it can be avoided, the shelf life can be longer. Now, the cheese made from pasteurized milk may be squeaky clean, but there's something to be said for probiotics.
Mm-hmm.
And cheese offers raw milk cheese especially, offers a lot of life.
Mm-hmm.
It's a living food. And I would like to, but I want to promote and support cheese, and I feel like education is very important, because I think that if people are better educated about cheese, then the better chance cheese will survive.
Mm-hmm. Okay. In your career, what has surprised you the most?
Well, I guess it shouldn't be so as much of a surprise, but there's a lot of fear of cheese.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a surprise at all. Other surprises? Oh, how far American cheese production has come
mm-hmm.
just in the past 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
It was coming along pretty well 20 years ago, but now it's just...
It's skyrocketed, yeah.
Yeah, this is where the excitement is, right here within our shores.
Mm-hmm.
And that follows a lot of other food and beverage production here.
Yes, yes. And what else are you doing? Does part of your job include the internet?
At artisanalcheese.com, that's my daytime job now. That's where I spend most of my working hours now. I serve as dean of curriculum. We
mm-hmm.
offer courses there, including a master's series, which is it helps people prepare for careers in cheese.
Mm-hmm. And is that in person and on the internet?
Oh, it's strictly, well, the internet is just the way to introduce people not only to our classes, including mm-hmm. the master series, but it's also to sell cheese mm-hmm. all across the United States. We do have a few international customers that pay more for FedEx than they pay for the cheese itself. But we do, as dean of curriculum, I develop the syllabus mm-hmm. for the classes, and mm-hmm. I also work with cheese procurement, cheese descriptions, and I write copy for the website. Mm-hmm. I write blogs. I would like to write more, but I do juggle. We wear a lot of hats at mm-hmm. this company. We're a fairly small company, but it's a very exciting company. Mm-hmm. Artisanalcheese.com.
Okay. And now, what is your newest position on the committee for the Certified Cheese Professionals from American Cheese Society?
Many years ago, someone asked me, "So, why do you call yourself a maître fromager?" And I said, "Well, because I was handed the title. It's not something that I asked for, because I was juggling the job of being a fromager in a French-inspired restaurant, kind of like a sommelier to wine, a fromager to cheese." And I was juggling the job of being the maître d' of the restaurant, maître d'hôtel, and mm-hmm. so Terrence put the two jobs together and called me a maître fromager.
He made up the term?
The term existed, but mm-hmm. he gave me that title, and then lo and behold, there is such a title in France, and it's a very serious thing. And so
you've been awarded it, correct?
Well, not by French people, but mm-hmm. French people like me, and I think most of them, I think, and I like them too. Most of them. Uh-huh. And so, because I support cheese making, not just here, as I said, but mm-hmm. Other places too.
Mm-hmm. So what's going on with the certificate for cheese professionals?
We just had our first exam, as many of your listeners probably know, mm-hmm. Because you've had some people that
yes,
passed.
Yes, we had two people passed on the show.
Right. And so the first exam was given in Raleigh at the last American Cheese Society conference in Raleigh last August 1st. And out of about 141 people that took the exam, about 121 passed and are now certified cheese professionals as endorsed by the American Cheese Society. Mm-hmm. And I've been involved with that because I had to make amends for taking on that title of being America's first maître fromager, I guess you could say, in a restaurant. So I've been involved in the certification process.
Now, what were you making amends for?
Well, for...
having
assuming,
a French title?
Assuming that I deserve that title because I was given it. And so,
okay.
And so instead of calling myself a cheesemonger, uh-huh. and, which doesn't
you
resonate.
You say that with a bit of contempt?
No, it's no contempt. It just doesn't roll
many
off the...
Many of us call ourselves cheesemongers.
Well, it's fine, but it just doesn't roll off the tongue as beautifully as maître fromager.
Well, that's because you've got the good French accent.
Somehow. Southern French accent, uh-huh. perhaps. So now I am the chairman of mm-hmm. the American Cheese Society Certified Cheese Professional Committee.
Mm-hmm. And you've taken over from...
Sue Sturman.
Yes. Sasha Davies, who developed the test?
Many of us, actually. Okay. And we did find many subject matter experts to mm-hmm. help us in the process. And our committee has about 7 members now, and... our combined experience on the committee alone is probably 120 years or more, 150 mm-hmm. maybe. Mm-hmm. And so we are trying to keep the program alive and vibrant mm-hmm. and preparing for next year's, or this year's conference in Madison, the second mm-hmm. exam.
Now, who are you expecting to take the test? Who are you looking for to take the test?
People, first, they have to have eligibility. They mm-hmm. need to have...
which is quite a few years.
Quite
of experience.
A few years, quite a few hours, and it can be a combination of course study work, academic, or hands-on. It can be volunteer; it doesn't have to be paid work, but they have to have something that shows that they. We don't want people to take the exam if they don't have a chance of passing it.
Right.
So we
okay.
want to make sure that they don't set themselves up for disappointment.
The test really has a lot of different categories.
It's
some
extremely
people
broad-based.
Might flunk.
And some people that thought they would.
It's the kind of test you have to study for.
And you need to know many areas of discipline because, as with in the cheese world, there's so many facets to it,
right.
as you know. And so it's not just milk types.
Did the people who are creating the test ever sit down and take it secretly so they didn't, and score it themselves so they wouldn't have to admit if they passed or failed?
Not that I know of, but there are quite a few people involved, and we do have a professional certification company mm-hmm. that's helping us so that it is a credible and legitimate and legally
binding. To make sure
binding.
The questions are fair or...
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's the questions are drawn from the American Cheese Society's... We did run a survey to find out what people's jobs were. And then the exam was designed about what people do as mm-hmm. cheese professionals in all phases, from importing to cheese making to restaurant work or any mm-hmm. other jobs. That are in the
now, industry. How are you helping it will benefit the people who take the test and pass it?
If they pass this exam and become an ACS certified cheese professional, then this will give the company they work for, it will give them a leg up. Mm-hmm. It will, given a choice between going into two cheese shops, one that has a certified cheese professional and one that doesn't, everything else being equal, you'd probably go to the one that has the CCP. Mm-hmm. And for someone looking for work, this would make them a more attractive candidate for a position, either as a cheese maker or as in a restaurant. I would hope that people would look at that and say, well, they care enough to learn about many facets. Mm-hmm. And there will be, maybe in the future, we'll have a certification for cheese makers. That may be the next certification mm-hmm. that the ACS endorses.
Yes, I was going to ask if they're planning on, in the future, having specialty areas.
We have to make sure that this program is viable, mm-hmm. that it can pay for itself.
Right, first do right. the regular test.
Because it took us 8 years just to get this first exam.
Right.
And it's a lot. And I think that a lot of members of the ACS were a little impatient to see this first exam come
because
around.
It took so long.
It took so long. And I thought, what are we doing? Mm-hmm. Well, we want to make sure it's good.
How much does it cost to take the test?
If you're a member of the ACS, I'm fairly certain it's $500. Mm-hmm. If you're a non-member, $650.
And did companies help pay for
Oh, yeah.
Their...
Many companies mm-hmm. Stepped up to the plate. Mm-hmm. Many sponsors and even some European sponsors, but mostly American companies and some of the bigger cheese
Anyone
companies.
Anyone in particular?
Well, Hervé Mons in mm-hmm. Lyon. He mm-hmm. was, I think, their company was the first to kick in some money into the exam. Atlanta Foods International, our company, artisanalcheese.com, many individuals, mm-hmm. Just cheese lovers, right. enthusiasts, mm-hmm. pitched in money. And
I know Whole Foods,
Whole Foods.
Had a whole
oh,
program
yeah. Whole
to
Foods.
Train
Huge.
Their cheesemongers who were taking the test.
Yes, Whole Foods
a
is...
A very extensive program.
Yeah, Whole Foods has been very supportive.
Very supportive.
Very supportive. Mm-hmm. And so without Whole Foods support in the first year, I don't think we would be this far along.
Mm-hmm. How do you think the test will evolve?
I think that it, we do have a new bank of questions, and so we're going to look at those questions at the Winter Fancy Food Show in San Francisco, January 22nd. And so we have a team of experts looking at the questions. Mm-hmm. And I think that the exam may become even more difficult in the future.
Oh.
Because
people will be happy they took it.
Exactly.
Took it early.
Take it now Take before it becomes impossible. Because as the cheese world evolves, there are more and more nuances, more things to know about mm-hmm. cheese, especially for a wide-based program like this. So the sooner you take it, the better off you'll be. So sign up now. Go to the American Cheese Society's website, and you can enroll today. But you better do it quick because we do have deadlines.
And I believe it's cheesesociety.org.
Cheesesociety.org, yes.
Yes.
Or you can just type in American Cheese
okay.
Society, and you'll
and
find
you'll
it there, too.
And you'll find it eventually.
Right.
Okay. Okay, well, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show. It's been delightful to interview you, my first big cheese. And this is Cutting the Curd at heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for having me, Diane.
You're
good
very
to see you.
Welcome. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.